This is Fresh Air. Stopping the spread of AIDS among drug users is very difficult. For over 10 years, my guest Don Desjarlais has been studying HIV transmission among drug users. Desjarlais is the research director at the Chemical Dependency Institute of Beth Israel Medical Center in New York. He serves on the National Commission on AIDS and consults on AIDS to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, the Centers for Disease Control, and the World Health Organization. I asked him if the largest population in which AIDS is still spreading is intravenous drug users.
It's a very close estimate. We don't really have data as good as we should have on new HIV infections, but it is either very close between men having sex with men, particularly young men having sex with older men, and people who share drug injection equipment.
Mm-hmm. Among IV drug users, is AIDS spreading because drug users don't know about this, about the spread of AIDS, or because when they need a fix, they don't care?
Neither. Really, neither of those reasons. First, essentially everybody in the U.S. Who can read or listen to TV knows about AIDS, and drug users are very interested in AIDS and very concerned about it. They know about AIDS. They want to practice safer injection. Many of them want to come into drug abuse treatment, but we don't have the treatment capacity to take them. Those that are not in treatment want to practice safe injection. The greatest difficulty is really the limited availability of clean injection equipment.
Well, there have been needle exchange programs set up experimentally in some cities around the country. I believe you're evaluating the needle exchange program in New York now.
Yes, I'm leading the study that's evaluating the New York syringe exchange programs.
Where are you on that study? Is there any preliminary evaluation you could share with us?
Yes, we have data from the first 6 months of the legal operation. And these programs went from an underground semi-legal status to a fully legal status last summer. With that move to fully legal status, they increased the number of people they were providing services to from about 1,000 prior to legalization to about 6,000 to 7,000 now. So that there's been a very substantial increase in the number of people reached, and there have been substantial decreases in sharing of injection equipment among people using the syringe exchange.
You've been working on drug-related research and drug-related policy for a long time. Do you think the needle exchange programs and the success that they seem like they're having is changing the attitude of drug policymakers in America?
It's changing. It's not rapid change, but it's certainly changing. The number of legally authorized syringe exchanges is growing exponentially. It's still rather small, but it's clearly been growing exponentially over the last 2 or 3 years. There is more interest in Congress, more interest in the federal government in getting out of the way of syringe exchanges. Up until the last several years, Congress and the administration were actively blocking syringe exchange efforts. Now there's at least a move towards neutrality.
I know that some people are recommending that AIDS awareness and education campaigns be targeted to high-risk groups as opposed to spreading the money, time, and effort behind those campaigns in a more random way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, clearly everyone in the United States ought to have some version of AIDS 101, basic AIDS education, how the virus is transmitted, how the virus is not transmitted to reduce unreasonable fears, the need to develop a sense of compassion for people with HIV infection and to not discriminate against people who have HIV infection. But in terms of preventing new HIV infections, we can do a reasonable job of identifying where those new infections are most likely to occur. We can identify it by age group, by behaviors, by background seroprevalence in the area, so that if we can focus some of our efforts on where the large number of new HIV infections is occurring, we can do a lot to reduce that number of new infections. Currently, the best estimate is that there are 40 to 80,000 new HIV infections per year. With sufficient prevention resources, we should be able to cut that in half at least.
Well, since you're focusing on drug users, besides needle exchange programs, what are some of the focuses that you could help with prevention?
Well, the U.S. National Commission and the previous Presidential Commission called for immediate availability of drug abuse treatment. that anybody who had a drug problem could show up at a treatment program and be receive services that same day. Right now, in many places, including in the Northeast, if you apply for drug abuse treatment, you're typically told, we'll take your application and we'll call you back in 2 or 3 months when we have an opening. If we're going to be serious about preventing AIDS and preventing tuberculosis associated with AIDS, we really do need to be able to provide immediate access to drug abuse treatment.
How much progress are you making in that direction?
Painfully slow. I mean, over the last several years, there has been modest increases in federal funds for drug abuse treatment that slowly trickle their way down to the localities. But because so many state governments and city governments are in such bad financial shape, they've been reducing the money allocated at the state and local levels almost as fast as the federal government has been increasing the funds for drug abuse treatment at the federal level. So there's been extremely modest net gains.
Are you personally recommending shifting money away from law enforcement to prevention?
Well, I think that there's really close to a consensus that a lot of the money spent on interdiction, of trying to seal the borders, sending up radar balloons and such, is essentially doing no good at all, and that money could be much better spent in terms of reducing demand, of developing effective prevention programs to keep people from getting started and into drug use problems in the first place, and providing treatment for people who have drug problems to stop those problems.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Don Desjarlais. He's director of research at the Chemical Dependency Institute at Beth Israel Medical Center in New York. He also sits on the U.S. Commission on AIDS. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the spread of AIDS among drug users, and my guest, Don Desjarlais, is the director of research at the Chemical Dependency Institute at Beth Israel Medical Center in New York. He sits on the AIDS Commission and also consults to the Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization. I think it's fair to say that in the population of female drug users, there's a sizable number of women who end up turning to prostitution when they're out of money and they need a fix. Is there a lot of AIDS being spread through drug-related prostitution?
Actually, the amount of HIV being spread through drug-related prostitution is really rather modest. Most females who inject drugs and turn to prostitution have a sense of professionalism about their activity. They are likely to strongly encourage their customers to use condoms, and a substantial amount of that sexual activity is also oral sex, which is a less efficient way of transmitting the virus. The biggest problem in drug use-related prostitution and transmission of HIV is probably around crack use, where the people exchanging sex for crack do not have the same sense of professionalism about their activity that other workers in the sex industry do. And the use of condoms is much less, and the volume of sexual activity can be much higher. So it's actually in sort of the crack house setting that once HIV gets into that type of setting, that you're more likely to see higher levels of HIV transmission than in the traditional heroin-injecting street prostitute.
Now, the whole issue for lawmakers has been, is it condoning drug use if you allow a needle exchange program to legally operate, or if you allow, if you turn your back on a shooting gallery as long as they're, you know, bleaching their needles and trying to prevent against AIDS? What do you think of that whole condoning controversy?
Well, I think condoning is a very, very slippery term, and it doesn't have any scientific meaning, any meaning that you can study in a research project. Clearly, at a policy level, doing syringe exchange work means that you're recognizing that illicit drugs are injected, and that you're recognizing that there are very serious health problems associated with that, and that you need to address those health problems, and you cannot wait until you found a solution to eliminate illicit drug injection before you address the health problems. So it's simply saying that we're not condoning this, but we're recognizing that it exists, and we're recognizing that it's a serious community problem that the health consequences are extremely serious, and that we have to address those health consequences and reduce the harm associated with illicit drug injection. And we have to do that right now, that we can't wait until we've evolved into some future society that doesn't inject illicit drugs.
Have you studied any other countries and how they're approaching the spread of AIDS among drug users?
I've probably studied about 30 or 40 other countries.
Which country has the best program, one that you would like to see us model a program on, any?
Probably Australia, mm-hmm. where they became very concerned about the possibility of HIV infection among their drug injectors. They had seen in the epidemic starting, and they essentially did everything. They changed their laws to permit over-the-counter sales of injection equipment. They set up very large numbers of syringe exchanges, and they greatly expanded the system of drug abuse treatment. Consequently, they've kept their HIV infection rate among drug injectors down to under 5% in all of their major cities, so that they really have escaped the type of HIV epidemic among drug injectors that we've seen here in the northeastern U.S. or in Spain or Italy.
How much of a drug problem is there in Australia?
It's substantial. Overall, on a per capita basis, it's probably close to the United States.
What's your evaluation so far of the Clinton administration and its posture toward AIDS and drug use?
Still sort of waiting for something to happen. There have been minor positive sounds, and there's been inaction on a number of points. The drug budget that they submitted to Congress was essentially just a Xerox of the previous administration one, and the report was that they didn't have time to think through the issues, and it clearly looks like they did not think through the issues, but it's still something of a waiting to see what happens. Lee Brown was appointed to head the Drug Czar office, and there are many people waiting to see what his policies will be, how he will allocate money to be spent to address the problem.
You're on the AIDS Commission. You consult to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, the Centers for Disease Control, and the World Health Organization. Do you feel that you have a particular message you're trying to give the groups that you're affiliated with?
Yes, it's basically a two-part message, that the problem of HIV infection among drug users is too big to ignore. It may be politically uncomfortable to pay attention to it, but it's simply too big to ignore, and it will grow bigger if attention is not paid to it. And secondly, there's overwhelming evidence that drug injectors will change their behavior in response to AIDS, and that the important work is to make sure that they have the means available for changing their behavior.
What's your next project, do you know?
Well, we will be looking at sort of the continued dynamics of HIV transmission over the long haul, and also spending more effort looking at ways to encourage safer sex among people who are infected with HIV in order to reduce the heterosexual transmission.
And what are the obstacles you face there?
People in love don't want to use condoms. It is not too difficult to get people, whether they're homosexual, heterosexual, bisexual, whether they do or do not use drugs, to use condoms in sort of their casual sexual relationships. But in the long-term, primary, committed sexual relationships, there seems to be very, very great emotional difficulties in using condoms. And that's where we need to do much more work to prevent heterosexual transmission.
Now, how'd you find that out?
Talking with a lot of people who should be practicing safer sex at higher levels than they are, from gay men to heterosexual drug injectors to female sexual partners who don't inject drugs, in the U.S., in Europe, in Asia. It's really a very common finding throughout the world that love and condoms don't mix very well.
What have your greatest frustrations been in trying to prevent the spread of AIDS among drug users?
Political denial of the problem, or political inertia. I mean, it's really much easier to get drug users to change their behavior than to get politicians to change their behavior.
Is it frustrating to you that drug use isn't going down?
Yes. I mean, it's going down in some ways, it's going up in others. But that's the type of frustration that you can say, well, the human nervous system seems to be designed to like certain types of drugs. And there isn't any way we can quickly redesign the human nervous system so that we may be in a situation of trying to design social policies to realize the human vulnerability to drug problems and to limit the damage that those drug problems will create for us. But that short of redesigning the human nervous system, we are probably not going to have societies in which psychoactive drugs are not used.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, fine. Nice talking with you.
Don Desjarlais is research director at the Chemical Dependency Institute of Beth Israel Medical Center in New York. This is Fresh Air.